Our second case this morning is United States against Roberts. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, judges of this honorable court, may it please the court. My name is Major Darren Johns, and together with Colonel James Rome, we represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Christopher Roberts, in this case. Chief Judge Efron, with your permission, I would request 3 minutes rebuttal time.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals correctly noted that the military judge committed error when he failed to permit appellant's trial defense counsel to cross-examine appellant's wife, E.R., concerning her alleged extramarital relationship with F.L. Specifically, when the military judge summarily denied trial defense counsel the ability to cross-examine E.R. about phone calls between her and F.L., the military judge violated appellant's Sixth Amendment right to effectively confront the witness against him.
Just to be clear, in your view, is that 412 evidence or is that just a right to cross-examine evidence?
At that point, Your Honor, it would just be the right to cross-examine. There was no evidence presented that anything in that conversation would be 412.
So you agree with the CCA that it's not 412?
Correct, Your Honor.
What about with respect to the trip to Florida? Why is that 412 evidence?
Your Honor, with what they were able to get out, if the military judge determined that there was no sexual evidence there, then that would not be 412 evidence either.
And for the purpose of your case, does it matter whether it's 412 or not?
For the purpose of our case, Your Honor, that would, if it's not 412, then it should be able to come in as evidence as well. Evidence of the relationship that was there and the extent of that relationship.
But if you're trying to establish that there was a sexual relationship between ER and FL, that does involve ER's sexual history, and so that would be 412 evidence, is that right?
If the evidence, defense counsel had been permitted to cross-examine ER concerning those telephone calls, and if the full damaging potential of that cross-examination is assumed to have been realized, and evidence had then come out about this extramarital relationship, this affair.
Well, the telephone calls are something else, but I mean, if we're talking, and I guess the question here is, how much is 412 involved in this case, or is it? And it appears that they were trying to establish that there was a sexual relationship in the bedroom incident and in the overnight weekend stay in Florida. And I guess what I'm asking you now is the defense arguing that that is, in fact, a 412 issue, or is it not?
Your Honor, that is the defense's argument is, yes, that is a 412 issue.
You just told me it wasn't.
To distinguish, Your Honor, it's a 412 issue if we get to the point of them being able to bring out the evidence of the sexual relationship. If we're not able to bring out the evidence of that sexual relationship, then no, it does not become a 412 issue.
But was the defense attempting to prove that ER was in a certain place at a certain time for purposes of showing location? Or were they attempting to bring that out for purposes of showing that there was sexual behavior?
Your Honor, they were attempting to bring that out for purposes of showing there was sexual behavior.
So it is 412?
It would be a 412
Thank
issue
you.
If they were
What
able to
evidence was there that the trip to Florida had anything to do with sex?
The evidence that was proffered was that they did go to Florida together and that they did stay in the same hotel room.
What evidence was there of that?
Did they stay in this hotel room?
Record page and so on.
Your Honor, in the joint appendix, if we look at approximately page, to find the correct page for you, but it's when the appellant is giving his statement to OSI. And during his statement to OSI, he says that his wife denied that FL had been in the hotel room with them. However, when he talked to his children confirmed that FL had indeed been in the hotel room. And that gave
So the children were in the hotel room as well?
Yes, Your Honor, they were.
Can you give me the page site, please?
If I could have a moment, Your Honor.
Well, you can do it on rebuttal.
Okay.
It's as you wish to use your time.
Okay, Your Honor.
I'm happy to have it in either form.
I have it. I'll have it here in just a...
But your reference is to the OSI report, which is the sealed piece.
My reference is to the video of the OSI interrogation or OSI interview with the appellant, Your Honor.
Why don't you give it to me on rebuttal so that you're not...
I have it right here, Your Honor. It's on the Joint Appendix, page 126, 125 to 126. Here Sergeant Roberts tells Special Agent Eber at the bottom page 125 of the Joint Appendix. He says, and then I was like, I said, let's be real. I said, let's be adults. You tell me the truth. I said, I can take it. And then she told me, she said it was a friend and that she took up there that he was supposed to get with some friends and he went to Florida. But they didn't end up getting or coming with him, and she said he pretty much stayed at her best friend's house. The Special Agent Eber says, okay, and then Sergeant Roberts says, you know, but my kids didn't tell me. When my kids, they was talking about it, they didn't say that. He says, what were they saying? My kids said that he was in the hotel room with them, not in the bed with her, but he said he was in the hotel room, and I kept asking her, is this true? And you know, she was lying about that. If I may, if there are no further questions on that point, if I may go back to the issue of the telephone conversation. The Air Force Court failed to perform a harmless error test that the Supreme Court enunciated in Delaware versus Von Arsdal to determine prejudice of the military judge in not allowing the appellant, the defendant, to cross-examine ER concerning that phone call. This court has stated in United States v. Bear that failure of the court of military review to test the confrontational error for prejudice is sufficient to justify reversal of the decision below. The United States...
Does that preclude us from conducting the balance, that Van Arsdale balance analysis ourselves?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does that preclude us from conducting it here rather than sending it back to the Court of Criminal Appeals?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe it precludes you from performing that here. And in fact, I believe that that it is important that you do perform that balancing test here.
Could you walk through the Van Arsdale test for us and give us your views on the various factors?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd be glad to. The first factor of the Van Arsdale test is that we look at the importance of the witness testimony in the case. And as we know in this case, ER's testimony was crucial to the government's case. Without her testimony, they would not have sufficient evidence to prove a consent. She is the only one, besides the appellant, who can testify as to whether or not she consented to the sexual intercourse with the appellant on the night of 21 February, 2006. Appellant, in his statement to OSI, adamantly denied that it was a rape. In fact, Mr. Kevin Jordan, contradicts ER statement when she says that she told him that appellant had raped her. Mr. Jordan says that she never told him that. So again, the issue of her statement saying that she didn't consent is central to the government's case. Had the government been able to cross-examine ER concerning this relationship and assuming the full potential of the damaging effects that cross-examination came out, they bring out the evidence of the romantic relationship. They bring out the evidence that was proffered that there was a plan between her and FL to set up the appellant.
Well, the government doesn't seem to contest that her testimony was important. What about whether it was cumulative?
On the issue of consent, it was not cumulative. Again, hers is the only testimony that says that she consented. Appellant denies that she consented. Appellant denies...
Well, he was able to cross-examine her on that, so I don't think that that's the cumulative point that you want to be talking about.
He was able to cross-examine her very briefly on consent, but was not able to go into detail about that, Your Honor.
But, I mean, isn't the issue that you wanted him to be able to cross-examine her about was whether or not she was having an extramarital affair?
Correct, Your Honor, and they were not able to cross-examine her on that effectively. Every time FL was mentioned in the trial, trial counsel would object, and the military judge would sustain that objection. That is most pointedly brought out when tried to cross-examine her about this phone call in the park. And as they were cross-examining her, the defense counsel asked ER about the telephone calls Shannon Park and asked, and one of those people you spoke to was FL. And government trial counsel immediately objected. The military judge sustained the objection, and then defense counsel tried again to elicit from ER her understanding of who was on the cell phone that night that prompted the argument.
So far, that doesn't have anything to do with sex, but so you're saying she was prevented from cross-examining as the relationship general?
Correct. They, at that point, Nara, they were trying to get into the relationship between FL and ER so they could then cross-examine her about that relationship to find out if that relationship
was indeed. You're trying to get to bias. Is that where you're trying to get to?
Yes, Your Honor. In order to get that bias, we had to show that that relationship existed to prove a motive for the bias and to prove that because of that relationship, the proffer was that ER had conspired with FL to get appellant out of the picture. In fact, there was proffered testimony that a hit had already been put on, an attempted murder had already been put on appellant by FL, and that FL was conspiring together with ER to get appellant out of the picture. And that evidence could not be brought out because defense was precluded from questioning ER about her relationship and the extent of that relationship with FL.
Well, let's assume that ER would have testified that there was a relationship and that there was a relationship that was sexual with FL. Where in the record did the defense say, Your Honor, the reason I want to bring this out is that I want to ask ER whether she conspired with FL to have a false rape complaint brought up in this case in order to achieve a particular objective? Where did the defense say that's our theory that we're getting at here, that the theory is a false rape complaint, that there's a conspiracy and the false rape complaint would be helpful to ER in the following manner?
Your Honor, nowhere in the record does it state that there was a proffer, there was a false rape complaint. What was proffered is in Joint Appendix the sealed portion of the Joint Appendix, pages 215 through 217.
You don't have to read any sealed material, but you can summarize what's not sealed about that.
Basically, what they proffered was that they had a witness who could state that there was a plan between ER and FL to set up the appellant, and there was actually a hit or an attempted murder by FL on ER, and that ER and FL were conspiring to set up the appellant, take his money, and get him out of the picture.
I understand that, but if the issue in the case is whether there was or was not consensual sex, where is the link between the sexual relationship alleged between ER and FL and the question of whether there was consensual sex between husband and wife in this case? Where did the defense say, here's where I'm going with that sexual relationship between ER and FL? Here's how I'm going to show that the sex between husband and wife was or was not consensual.
Your Honor, I don't believe the defendants, because they were not allowed to question FL, were able to get that point out.
But isn't it incumbent upon the defense to say to the judge, here's our theory. We're not in this to prove that there was an affair just to throw mud at the parties. We have a real theory that goes to consent here. And if the defense did not bring that theory to bear on the judge, how can we fault the judge for ruling the way that the judge ruled in this case?
Your Honor, the theory that was presented to the judge was that there was a plan between ER and FL to set up the appellant to get him out of the picture. By showing this relationship existed and looking at the facts that ER had engaged with appellant in sex before to calm down after an argument. It could be that when she went to the park and made that phone call to FL, that may be when they decided to concoct this plan and say, hey, this is our opportunity to get him out of the picture.
That
can accuse him of rape.
But that wasn't presented to the judge. Was it as a theory as to why they wanted to get the information out?
The theory presented to the judge was they had a plan to set him up to get him out of the picture. They were trying to set him up to get him out of the picture so ER could be with FL. The opportunity presented itself, But again, because they were not allowed to cross-examine ER about that telephone call, that we don't know what was said there. We don't know if they took if that was where they decided to take advantage of this opportunity to effectuate their plan to get ER, to get the appellant out of the picture.
This seems like a place to apply Occam's razor. As the government says in its brief, if she wanted to get him out of the picture, why didn't she just divorce him instead of go to all this trouble that would drag her into court and everything else?
A very good question, Your Honor. And when we don't know what was going through her mind, if she, we know the marriage relationship was falling apart. They talked about divorce for a while. The appellant even told Kevin Jordan, why won't you just give me the divorce? It could be that she was using this rape allegation as leverage for the divorce. She knew that the divorce was coming, and she would fare better in the divorce if her husband had rape accusation or conviction. It would set her up in a better positioning for divorce proceedings.
Now, was the defendant, appellant, allowed to call the witness that they said could substantiate all this?
No, Your Honor, they weren't. When they, in the motions hearing, when they went to question him on the stand, the judge said, well, isn't this really impeachment evidence against FL? And admitting that it would be used for impeachment, the judge said, well, you're putting the
card on. Are his initials sealed or not sealed, by the way?
Those initials, they're in the sealed portion. I don't think there's any reason why the initials themselves need to be sealed.
Okay. We're talking about R here, right?
VR, yes, sir. Okay. Mr.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And so they were not allowed to question him at all or on this particular topic?
They did not question him at all after that.
Did they elect not to, or were they restrained from doing it on at all?
Well, if we look at the record as a whole, they were restrained from doing that at all. It seems, again, that every time they would try to bring up anything to do with FL, they would get that objection, and they weren't allowed to proceed further. Even when...
That's an ambiguous response. Were they allowed to question R or not?
They began questioning R, Your Honor, and then the judge told them to wait until later to question him. The opportunity never presented itself to question him.
Did they seek to call him again?
No, Your Honor, they did not. So.
Counsel, I'm a little confused. I had thought that your argument was that the reason that there was error of a constitutional magnitude here was because that they were prevented from cross-examining the wife about matters that would have tended to show her motive to fabricate. And when the chief judge was asking about what was the link, what we talked about instead was a plot to murder someone. So I'm a little bit confused as to what the basis of your constitutional complaint is. Is it changed from the brief? Is it changed in the lower court?
No, Your Honor. And Chief Judge, I see that my time has expired.
You can take the time necessary to answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. The motive to fabricate, Your Honor, is there if she's having this relationship with FL. She wants to continue that relationship and wants to get her husband out of the picture. By being able to cross-examine ER about that relationship, they first need to prove that that relationship exists. They were denied the opportunity to even prove it exists because they were not allowed to cross-examine ER about that relationship.
I understand your position.
Were they allowed to cross-examine ER about whether there was a plot to kill him?
No, they were not.
Did they ask to do that?
Again, when they began to cross-examine ER, they were immediately shut down when the name FL came up immediately without any sort of analysis, without any sort of reasoning. The judge shut them down, told them that he would not allow that line
of
questioning.
What is the standard? Is there some evidentiary level that has to be achieved before you can start cross-examining people about plots to kill and such?
Your Honor, if we look at the... we need to look and make sure that the evidence is relevant and that the evidence is more probative than prejudicial. And we believe that in the 412 motion, the military judge erred in applying that analysis. He said that he found the witnesses non-credible. But the United States Supreme Court has said that in McCoy versus North Carolina, that relevancy has no credibility component. Rather, lack of credibility goes to the weight of the evidence. And in Henry, Kentucky, I'm sorry, in...
So there's no standard? As long as you can mouth the theory, it's relevant?
If you can put out the theory and the evidence is relevant, and if looking at that relevant evidence, it is constitutionally required, then...
So it could be completely fabricated nonsense, but as long as it fits a theory in the case, it's okay.
According to let me see if I can find it here. According to the United States v. Banker, in a motion on that issue, it says that we have to assume that the allegations are true. And if we assume that the allegations are true and that they are relevant, then if they would be probative to the outcome of the case, then yes, they would have to come in. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for my rebuttal if there's no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. You have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
Yeah, please, the court. I'm Captain Janie Middleton. Together with Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Weber, I represent the United States, the appellee in this case. The military judge's ruling, which prevented the trial defense counsel from cross-examining ER about an alleged extramarital relationship, was harmless error. In determining whether constitutional error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, this court weighs the five factors set forth by the Supreme Court.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I understand you're arguing this case on prejudice. Is that right?
On harmless error, yes, Your Honor.
Right. And harmless error as with respect to all aspects that are in play, or all aspects meaning with respect to the right to cross-examine about the trip to Florida, the right to cross-examine about being in the room in the house and the phone calls.
Specifically, Your Honor, it's with respect to the finding of error that the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals found. The Air Force Court specifically found that that the error was the limitation in the cross-examination of ER regarding the alleged extramarital relationship with FL and the phone call that she placed to FL prior to reporting the rape. The Air Force Court did not find error with respect to the other limitations, and appellant has not appealed that issue to this court. In applying the...
Did the Florida trip go in or didn't it?
There was evidence of the Florida trip at trial. Appellant's videotaped statement to OSI was introduced by the government at trial. In that statement, appellant described his, or explained his discovery of the fact that ER had taken a trip to Florida with a man, and it was FL. He went so far as to state that he knew that the two of them had stayed in a hotel room together. So as the Air Force Court found, there was evidence that was presented at trial with respect to the trip to Florida.
The trip to Florida and that they stayed together, or the trip to Florida that they took together to go to a common friend's baptism?
Well, there
it's
was
a question.
Yes, Your Honor. The evidence was through appellant's statement. In an appellant's statement, he said that he determined that the two had stayed in a hotel room together because that was information that he received from his children.
So that's whatever that is, that's the evidence that they were in the same hotel room together?
Yes.
Finding H of the judge's finding seems to be fairly clearly erroneous, that in your view, there is no evidence that the accused was deployed, nor while the accused was deployed that Mrs. Roberts, and he's not FL here, he's his name, took a weekend trip to Florida together. So to be clear, that's clearly erroneous, is it?
Well, Your Honor, the difference with that is that his ruling was after the closed 412 hearing. The evidence that I spoke of earlier was presented in the government's case in chief. So at the closed 412 hearing...
At that point, there was no evidence.
Okay. Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, fair enough.
Counsel, as I read the granted issue, it doesn't appear that defense is limiting itself to the error identified by the Court of Criminal Appeals.
That, Your Honor, under the this
that
court,
it's that the pardon.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Under this court's policy of law of the case, the Air Force Court's determination with respect to whether there was error in the other limitations has become law of the case, and appellant has not appealed those issues. However, in any event,
the issue presented isn't the issue presented whether the judge whether it was harmless error when the judge prohibited the appellant from demonstrating that his wife, the alleged rape victim, had a motive to fabricate the issue of consent based on her extramarital romantic relationship that gave her an incentive to either get a appellant out of the picture or protect her extramarital relationship. How is that limited to the one error identified by the Court of Criminal Appeals?
I guess, Your Honor, my reading of it is, since the issue is asking whether it was harmless error, then the issues with respect to the Air Force Court's finding of error, which was only with respect to the limitation on the cross-examination of ER regarding the alleged affair and the phone call placed to FO.
Looks to me like the first four words are whether the military judge, that the defense is attacking the military judge's ruling, not the Court of Criminal Appeals ruling.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I missed that distinction in your question.
So you argue why all of it is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Take the broadest possible reading of appellant's argument and put it into an HPRD context.
Yes, Your Honor. In applying or weighing the five Van Arsdale factors in this case, it reveals that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And I want to address each of the five factors, but I'd like to start with the fifth factor, which is the overall strength of the prosecution's case. Here, the strength of the government's case was overwhelming. In addition to ER's compelling testimony, appellant's own statements and the physical evidence overwhelmingly support the rape conviction. And here, appellant's own statements are very strong evidence in the case. Appellant, as I mentioned earlier, gave a videotaped statement to investigators. In his videotaped statement, appellant describes how the incident began when he intercepted a phone call placed by FL to ER's cell phone. Appellant describes how he confronted ER about the phone call. He admits that he became enraged. He admits that he then choked ER. He explains that he choked her to let her know that he was upset, that he was mad. And then he described how he felt hurt by ER, and he explained to investigators that at that point in time, he told ER, quote, "I'm fixing to let you know how it feels to be hurt," and then proceeded to engage in intercourse with ER, during which he held a blanket over ER's head and repeatedly put the blanket back over her head each time she attempted to lift it off. And notably, according to appellant's own statement, ER accused him of rape within moments of the incident and before she left the house and received or made any phone calls. And that's very important with respect to the limitation on the cross-examination of the substance of any phone call that ER had made to FL prior to reporting the rape, because according to appellant's own statement, ER had already accused him of rape prior to leaving the home and making any of those phone calls. Appellant also made statements to his friend and to his neighbor the night of the incident. Appellant's friend testified that appellant had called him upset, stated that a man had called ER's cell phone. Appellant admitted that he and ER had an argument in which he pushed her, in which he choked her. And appellant also later admitted to his friend that during this incident, he had had sex with ER. Furthermore, appellant made statements to his neighbor that night. Appellant's neighbor testified that appellant had called him and stated that he caught ER cheating on him and that he, quote, jumped her. In addition, the physical evidence strongly supports the rape conviction. ER suffered several scratches and bruising that was consistent with her account of the rape. Photographs were taken by ER's neighbor and by the sexual assault nurse examiner following the incident that clearly showed the scratches and the bruising. The violence surrounding the intercourse, as described in appellant's own statement to investigators, renders appellant's story of rough but consensual makeup sex wholly implausible. Further belying appellant's story of makeup sex is the undisputed fact that ER and appellant were not making up. This was not an incident of reconciliation. The evidence shows that they were still engaged in a heated argument that continued after the intercourse. Appellant's theory that ER fabricated the rape allegation in order to get appellant out of the house so that she could be with FL is equally implausible. Appellant's own statement provides that he asked ER for a divorce approximately a week prior to this incident. So it fails logic that ER would concoct a rape allegation in order to get appellant out of the house when she simply could have acquiesced to appellant's own request for a divorce. Moreover, it begs the question of why would ER need to concoct a rape allegation to get appellant out of the house when appellant had already assaulted her? He choked her, and appellant pled guilty to the choking. A domestic assault and reporting of the domestic assault to appellant's supervisor would have been enough, clearly, to get appellant out of the house. So there was no need, ER had no motive to fabricate a rape allegation when there was already the choking incident. So the strength of the government's case weighs heavily in favor of finding harmless error. And I'll turn now to the remainder of the Van Arsdell factors. And I'll now address the remainder of them in order. The first factor that this court looks at is the importance of the witness's testimony. Clearly, her testimony is important in the sense that she is the victim in this case. However, her testimony largely corroborates appellant's own statements to investigators and his statement to his friend and his statement to his neighbor that night. And so that somewhat mitigates against this factor, against the importance of ER's testimony. Moreover, this one factor cannot be dispositive of the analysis. This court set forth in Othuru that it is a better practice to balance all of the Van Arsdell factors rather than to focus on one as being dispositive. With respect to the second factor, this court considers whether the testimony would have been cumulative. And in here, it's important to note that the military judge's ruling and his limitation on the cross-examination of ER did not operate to exclude all evidence of an alleged affair. Again, going back to appellant's statement that was admitted at trial, his statement to investigators, in which appellant described his discovery that ER had taken a trip to Florida with FL, and that he found out through his children that ER and FL had stayed in the hotel room together. He further explained in his statement that he confronted ER about the trip and that she kept lying about it. And appellant also described how it was FL's phone call placed to ER's cell phone that had precipitated the incident. In addition, ER's own testimony provided some evidence of an alleged affair because ER testified about appellant's suspicions that she was cheating on him. And she testified that just prior to the incident, appellant woke her up and yelled that he had called the cell phone and demanded to know whether or not she was cheating on him. Additionally, there's the testimony of appellant's friend. He testified that appellant had repeatedly accused ER of cheating on him. So despite the military judge's ruling, there was evidence of an alleged affair. So now I'll turn to the third factor in which this court considers whether or not there was corroborating evidence. And again, there was substantial corroborating evidence in this case. You have
hang on for 1 second. Can you hold your place so you don't lose it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You've just declared with great certainty there was evidence of an alleged affair. So now doesn't that substantiate that the military judge erred and the CCA erred in not letting the other stuff get cross-examined? Understanding that you're arguing this on harmfulness, but you started by saying there's only one error in this case, the failure to allow cross-examination on the phone call from the park. But now you've just declared that there was evidence of an affair. So doesn't that mean there is also error with respect to the other aspects of the issue presented?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because what the trial defense counsel proffered with respect to their 412 motion is the trial defense counsel wanted to put on evidence in the form of witness testimony from two witnesses, and this does come from the sealed portion of the record, I'll use initials, from DT and LH. And the trial defense counsel wanted DT, and DT did testify at the closed hearing, that he went to someone's house. This person's who resided at the house had the same first name as ER, but he could not recall the location of the house. He wasn't sure whether this house was on a military installation or not. And
that was the weakest of the bunch. What about cross-examining ER on the nature of the relationship?
Well, and
you said there was evidence of an affair, so why not allow cross-examination of ER on that?
And that's precisely the error that the Air Force Court found, Your Honor, that the trial defense counsel should have been allowed the opportunity to cross-examine ER regarding the alleged affair.
Counsel, not just the phone call.
Correct, not just the phone call.
Does your argument change, all the arguments you made under Van Arsdale? I perhaps had misinterpreted your introduction. I thought your introduction was assuming all of the errors alleged in this case. There's no prejudice under the Van Arsdale factors. Does your argument change if all of the errors alleged by the defense, that is with respect to the nature of the relationship, are assumed in this case? That is, that the defense was not allowed to bring out that any evidence of the relationship. And if the defense was allowed to bring out that there was a sexual relationship between ER and FL, something that's not established but assume that it was, does your argument change at all under the Van Arsdale factors?
No, Your Honor, it's the same exact argument, and I think that I did not articulate that very well.
That was my understanding with the point you were making under Arthuru, is that assuming that the relationship was established, that there was no prejudice for those factors.
Exactly, Your Honor, particularly with the strength of the government's case. Even had the defense been given the opportunity to fully realize the potential of cross-examination and to question ER about the alleged affair, given the implausibility of the defense theory, that would not have tipped the credibility balance in appellant's favor in this case. I'll turn back to the third factor in which this court considers whether there was corroborating evidence to the witness's testimony. And as discussed already, appellant's own statements to investigators, appellant's statements to his friend and to his neighbor, as well as the physical evidence, all corroborate ER's testimony in this case. So the final factor that this court considers is the extent to which the witness was otherwise or cross-examination was otherwise permitted. And here, ER was extensively cross-examined by trial defense counsel. First, she was cross-examined on her motivations in reporting the incident. Trial defense counsel was permitted to elicit testimony from ER that she did not want to press charges against the appellant, that she didn't want to provide a statement to OSI, that she, quote, just wanted to get him out of the house that night, and that she had made several phone calls before she reported the incident. Additionally, trial defense counsel was permitted to conduct a line of cross-examination that was aimed at establishing an alternate source of ER's cervical bruising in this case. Trial defense counsel was permitted to cross-examine ER about a medical condition that she has in which her cervix bleeds easily. They were allowed to cross-examine her about her use of a vibrator and the number of times and temporal proximity in which she had engaged in sexual intercourse prior to the incident.
But what does that have to do with the thing that the defense counsel, that the appellant's counsel is complaining about? What does that cross-examination have to do with the motive to fabricate?
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't have to do with the motive
Thank
to fabricate,
you.
No. But with respect to this factor, this court's, or in case law, this court has looked at the extent to which other cross-examination was allowed. So admittedly, this was not going towards bias, but going towards an alternate source of the injury.
Does the government see this as a 412 case or 608 case?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that it makes a difference because the harmless error analysis is the same. It's the same five Van Arsdale factors. And certainly the Air Force Court commented on the fact that, well, maybe some of this that they wanted to elicit in cross-examination wasn't even 412 evidence. Maybe it was just typical bias evidence. But regardless, it's still the Van Arsdale analysis that applies in determining whether this was harmless error. And just to conclude on the fourth factor, there was a third line of cross-examination that the trial defense counsel was permitted to go down. And that's cross-examination that was aimed at appellant's theory that either ER had consented to the intercourse or that appellant had a mistaken belief as to ER's consent. Trial defense counsel was permitted to cross ER on her practice of engaging in sexual intercourse with the appellant when she didn't really want to, and in her words, in order to shut him up. And trial defense counsel also was able to elicit testimony from ER that she had previously engaged in what she termed make-up sex with appellant in order to calm him down after an argument. Thus, appellant was given the opportunity to fully develop his theory that he and ER had engaged in a session of rough make-up sex. And the extensive cross-examination of ER did provide the military judge with an ample basis upon which to judge ER's credibility. There are no further questions. I will conclude. In conclusion, given the facts of this case, the overwhelming strength of the government's case, and the implausibility of appellant's theory of the case, it is clear that additional cross-examination of ER regarding an alleged affair would not have tipped the credibility balance in appellant's favor. The balance of the Van Arsdale factors weighed heavily in favor of the government and demonstrate that the military judge's limitation on the cross-examination of ER was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the lower court's findings. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Contrary to the government's position, the evidence here concerning consent is not overwhelming in this case. Although there was evidence presented concerning the bruising that occurred, there was also evidence presented showing that ER bruised easily, and the appellant does admit that he choked ER. It could also be the cause for the bruising. So the bruising and the physical injuries also corroborate the appellant's version of events. Now, before government sat down, they said that looking at everything as a whole, that it would not have impacted the decision of the court. But that is not the test that this court applies to find error. The test enunciated in the United States v. Moss is that to find that the error warrants relief, this court does not need to conclude that appellant's defense would have succeeded. Instead, the inquiry should focus on whether the military judge's ruling essentially deprived appellant of his best defense that may have tipped the credibility balance in appellant's favor. And this court reiterated that just last year in Collier, and even went so far in Collier as to say that we find this could have tipped the balance does not mean that it will or even should do so at a rehearing. And the Supreme Court, United States v. Van Arsdale, specifically rejected the outcome determinative prejudice test. The appellant was deprived of his best defense when he was not allowed to elicit evidence, to elicit testimony in cross-examination of ER concerning the extramarital relationship that would have led to the motive to get appellant out of the picture and by alleging a rape allegation. Once her credibility comes into question, then the evidence of consent cannot stand. Once her credibility is called into question, we don't have any other witness who can testify that she did consent, did or did not consent at that point, except for the appellant and his version of events say that she did consent to the sexual intercourse that night. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for your presentation. That concludes today's arguments, and the court will be in recess until January 25th at 9:30 a.m.